I'm Heidi. I'm a compulsive reader.
Hi.
So I'm taped, right? Wow. Okay. Okay. Gosh, I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you for having me. A woman that I sponsor was booked tonight, and she can't make it, so she called me. And it's so funny. My first inclination is like, yeah, I don't really think I can do that. Hello? You know, it's like, that's my knee-jerk reaction. No, don't think I can do it. And I'm like, wait a minute. I said, of course I can. So I'm really grateful to be here. Let's see. I guess I'll qualify. I'm a little nervous. I walked into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous in 1993. It was 93. My abstinence date is February 25th, 1995. So that's 7 years and some change. Imperfect abstinence. In terms of my body size, I don't really know my highest weight. It was somewhere in the neighborhood of probably 25 to 30 pounds heavier than I am now. For the men, this probably won't make much sense, but I was probably like a 14, 16 size. My lowest weight... I don't really identify as an anorexic at all, but my lowest weight was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 pounds. Today I weigh about 130-something, and my clothes are my barometer for the most part. I think these are an 8 or a 10, and they're comfortable. They are comfortable. They're not cutting into me. I mean, I've got room. I suppose the visual doesn't help on the tape, but I do have room. Okay, so that's the body stuff. And my weight's gone up and down a little bit in the room. So, that's just my experience. And it's never been a 30, 40, 50-pound weight swing, but I've definitely gone up and down maybe 5 to 6 pounds before. Okay, so what it was like. What was it like? It was pretty dismal. My compulsive overeating... started, I don't even know if that's the right word, but my first memories, I guess, is the right word to use, was when I was, six or seven, pretty young. And I want to say that the language that I'm going to use to describe what it was like, I didn't have that language, okay? I didn't know what was wrong with me. I just thought I had this food problem, or, I didn't. So a lot of the language or a lot of the insight that I have of what it was like is only in being in recovery. I didn't have this jargon then. So in any event, okay, so what was it like? So I was... As a little kid, I was lean. I was pretty normal in terms of my body size. I came from, kind of a messed up family, pretty messed up family. And as my sponsor would say, well, honey, alert the media. Who doesn't? that's just what she says, and that helps me get sort of right sized. So I was kind of a messed up family, but they were loving and they did what they could do. And in terms of food, I remember binging at a very early age, and again, I didn't have the language of, oh, I'm binging. I didn't know that. I just knew that I ate a lot of food, and I remember trying to control my food at a very early age. And one of my earliest memories was eating out of a carton of ice cream with a spoon. We had a dog at the time, and I remember wishing I could stop, but I couldn't. Seeing the level go down, 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 down. And we had a dog. The dog's name was Iger, and I thought, well, if I stop and I let the dog lick the spoon, then I wouldn't possibly then take a spoon that a dog licked and continue to eat with it. Now, I'm just a little kid, and I'm thinking of this. How I'm thinking of this, I have no idea. And so I did. I let the dog lick the spoon, and then I kind of looked at it like, it's not that bad, and I kept eating, So, I mean, this manipulation of trying to stop started at a very early age. And again, no one gave me this idea. No one told me this. This is me cooking it up in my own noggin at a very early age. It didn't really show up on my body in terms of my compulsive overeating probably until puberty. And I think that that's really normal. I look at... I look at young girls in the kind of 12 to 13 range, and often they do kind of plump up, you know, they start to menstruate or whatever, you know, and but for a compulsive overeater, it was just like, whoa, you know, I couldn't handle the changes my body was going through, and I didn't really have women around me to support me and to love me and to kind of guide me through that process, and I, as many women don't. And I really started to eat. I really, really started to eat. And I remember, you know, people would say things like, oh, that's too salty, that's too sweet, I'm full. Oh, but it's not snack time yet, let's go play. I mean, these things meant nothing to me. You know what I mean? Seriously. I mean, what, too salty, too sweet, you're full? You know, come on. And I didn't know why. I didn't know why. And I have another memory of being a very little girl and hosting a slumber party, some sort of gathering of young girls in my home, and we woke up the next morning, and my stepmother and father were cooking. We're making, like, you know, pancakes or whatever, and I remember having that tight feeling in my chest, that panic, because I felt like they were going to eat all the food, and what was going to happen if I didn't get it? I mean, this is absurd. It's like four girls and, like, you know, 99 pancakes, but I didn't think there'd be enough for me. And a girlfriend of mine, you know, little girl, poured a glass of orange juice, and I said, stop it, you're taking too much. I just screamed at her. And all these girls, I'm talking about incomprehensible demoralization, all these girls looked at me, and my stepmom looked at me, and my father looked at me as if I was an alien. Like, what are you talking about, you know? And I felt so ashamed, but I was panicked. You were taking too much, and I wasn't going to get enough, you know. And hello, that, like, marks my disease, you know. You're going to get what I have, or I'm not going to get what I want, you know. So those are just, I just share with you those sort of early memories in terms of my disease. And I don't know if the disease was, like, genetic and it's in me, and so given any circumstances I would have had this disease, or if you know, because I came from this kind of messed up family and have the disease, or because I live in, you know, American culture. I mean, who knows? It really doesn't matter. And I remember when I was very new in the program, I had a sponsor, and she said to me, she said, I was like, you know, what was me, my mom, my dad, you know, blah, 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 my stepmom. My dad, you know, was always having affairs and whatever. And I said to her, you know, I think it's because of my family. I wouldn't have the disease if it weren't for them. And she said to me, I was brand new, and she said to me, you know, you may still have this disease even if you came from a different kind of home, like a more loving home or a more stable home or whatever. And ooh, that pissed me off. I mean, that made me mad. And I never talked to her again. So, you know, solve that problem. So, in any event, thank you. That was my solution, you know. Because how dare she say that? I mean, you know, how could she possibly know? So, let's see. Teenage years, so I guess we're relatively normal. I went to boarding school, which was probably the best thing that could have happened to me. My dad, you know, in his late 50s, married, like, a 19-year-old. I mean, just weird stuff was going on. It was the 80s, Reaganomics, lots of drugs, lots of money, you know. It was just a wacky time. And I went to this boarding school, and it was probably a really, really good thing. And my life was relatively, I guess, normal. I would get heavier and thinner, and I would compulsively, I got into compulsively exercising. And living on campus, I had access to, like, the football locker room at, like, 24 hours a day, essentially, you know. So I would think nothing of midnight walking across campus and working out in, like, the football locker room, like me and, like, the janitorial staff, you know. I mean, seriously, that's, like, how it was. And I became very friendly also with people in the dining hall because they held the keys to the food. So in any event, what can I share? You know, my understanding of the disease, or my experience of the disease, I have no understanding of it, is that it is progressive. And the disease during my childhood and adolescence, I would say, was not killing me. It just was not killing me. It was annoyance. It was a mystery. I didn't really get it. I thought maybe I'd grow out of it. And people tried to help. You know, people would say things like, oh, you have such a pretty face, or, oh, you were so thin last summer, or, you know, they try to be helpful. And I mean, that's saying that stuff to a compulsive overeater just does not, for me, just did not help. It just made me filled with more shame. And you know, and I dated cute boys, and I was involved in theater, and, you know, I mean, so it was like, it was good times overall. So I graduated from high school, and then what happened? Well, some wacky things kind of went on, and I ended up moving out to Southern California because I had some family out here. And they really took me in. They very much took me in. I didn't really have a place to go at that time. And they really, this was an aunt and uncle and a cousin, they really tried to offer me a home, which was very generous of them. And this is at this time my disease really took off, and it has nothing to do with Southern California or anything like that. It just has to do, I believe, with the progressive nature of the disease. And at this time I was really binging in a way that I hadn't binged previously, and attempting to starve and to compulsively exercise in a way that I hadn't done before. And those were probably, two or three years were probably some of the darkest years of me for this disease. I was stealing from my employer both money and food for money. Both money for food and food itself. I was lying. You know, they talk about, you know, lower companions. I mean, I was definitely, like dating sort of alcoholic, drug addict, drug dealer kind of people. But on the outside, everything kind of looked okay. Do you know what I mean? Like I was trying to manage this life that really looked relatively normal with this really dark, desperate disease going on. And I remember I worked in this like little kind of shop where they sold food and knickknacks, and I would always take the closing shift, which is really late at night. And if anyone knows me, I'm not a night person at all. But I knew that at night there was no one around, and so I could just eat and eat and eat and, like, you know, read fashion magazines and not serve my employer at all. I mean, just basically steal the food. And if there was a cutesy pair of earrings that I felt I deserved, well, I'd take those too. You know what I mean? So. You know, I mean, we're not talking like, you know, cars or diamonds or anything, but, you know, I would steal because I, you know, damn it, I deserved it. Didn't you know the horrors that I had suffered? And I was the kind of binger that was not dainty. I mean, my clothing was stained. I always share about this because I don't want to forget. I mean, I didn't have a shirt that didn't have, like, chocolate grease, ketchup. I mean, just stained, you know, because I, in the car, fast and furious, you know. I didn't, like, take the knife and the fork and, you know, cut the donut or whatever. It was, like, in the face, you know what I mean? My sponsor says, you know, take out the rain gear, you know. That's how I was. I was like, ooh. And at this time, my binging was really, really desperate. Oh, God, it was just desperate. And the lying and the cheating and the stealing and all of that stuff. And I couldn't stop. And I wanted to. And I did the diet clubs and the weight, you know, the different weight loss programs and the videos. And I remember being in a meeting of a weight loss group. Not to say that those places don't have wonderful things to offer, but I was in one of their meetings and I was sitting there, you know, swollen and bloated and, ugh, you know, when your eyes are like golf balls because you've been binging and everything hurts, your skin hurts. And I'm in there just basically in a coma. And you know, you got weighed in. And, of course, I was always on the way up, you know. And they go, oh, well, you know, maybe you should try this plan or whatever. Anyway, so I'm sitting there and there's a little old lady next to me. And she's lovely, you know, and she's like knitting or something. And she says, honey, I have got the greatest recipe for a chocolate pie or bust or something like that. And it has no fat and no... And I looked at her, and I believe this was a spiritual experience. Now, of course, I didn't have the word spiritual experience at that time, you know. And I just kind of smiled, and I said, okay. And something said to me, that is not it. You know what I mean? Like something, I don't know if it was in my heart or in my head or in my gut, I don't know where it was. I just heard something say, that's not it. because I'd need like 10 of them. You know what I mean? Like, I knew that it wasn't a problem with food, you know, and it wasn't like I was in OA the next day, but in retrospect, I believe that was that, you know, talks about those moments of clarity or those little slivers of clarity. So how did I find OA? One of the lovely byproducts of my disease, and I don't know if anyone can relate to this, is that I was always sick. I always had some stomach thing or some viral thing, or like I'd have wicked sinus infections and migraines, and I mean just really, really sick, you know. And I was always on antibiotics, and then I'd get resistant to the antibiotics, so I'd have to take more, and da 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 da, you know. And of course, I mean, here I was eating like crap, not taking care of myself, exercising. I didn't care if I had a broken leg; I was in the gym. Do you know what I mean? It was like I mean, it's no wonder that I was took such poor care of myself. I mean, my teeth. I mean, everything. I couldn't get it together. It just was too complicated, I guess, to be a grown up. So what happened? Okay, so I'm always sick. So I was going to a community college. This is down in San Diego. And everyone's heard the story, but that's just my story. So I'm sitting there, and I'm like, you know, just wanting to die. And I'm all, like, heavy and puffy and unhappy. And there was a sign, like, just, you know, 8.5 by 11 white piece of paper. It said, "Do you feel like an alcoholic with food? If so, call this number." And those words, like, pierced into my head. Do you feel like an alcoholic with food? If so, call this number. And I didn't know anything about the disease of alcoholism. I mean, that I had no knowledge of that disease, other than people went to AA and they didn't drink, and I guess their lives got better. But, I mean, other than that, I didn't know anything. And that was probably just from, like, you know, TV or movies or whatever. And I certainly didn't know anything about the disease of compulsive overeating or anorexia or bulimia or any of that stuff. So what happened? So there was a phone number on this piece of paper. So I called this number, and it was a treatment center for people with eating disorders, and I got a message, and it said, "We are patterned after the program of Overeaters Anonymous," and then blah 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 blah. And I thought, well, I mean, I'm certainly not sick enough to go to a treatment plan, you know. I mean, I had all this arrogance, you know, lots and lots of arrogance. I was very smart and special. So, but I heard the words Overeaters Anonymous, and I'd never heard those words before. I'd never heard those words before. If I had, I didn't remember it, but I'd never heard those words before. So one day, and I don't know if it was, and this is the God's honest truth, I don't know if this was 6 months later, 10 days later, 2 days later, 9 months later. I mean, I have no recollection. I believe it was within a year, and truly, it could have been 5 days later. I'm living with my aunt and uncle, and they had a cabinet, and in the cabinet, this is where they kept all the cookies. And I was the kind of gal, I could not get out the door, just like I hear in AA meetings, I mean, with the coffee cup and the vodka. I mean, I could not get out the door without, you know, right here, give me the cookies, you know what I mean? Like, I was... you know, whatever. So I'm standing there looking at all the stuff, you know, and these weren't mine because, you know, they were theirs, and then I have to eat them and go replace them and, you know, all that stuff. You know, just kind of in a coma looking at them, and I looked down, and there were phone books. Now, these phone books had been there. I mean, this is where they kept their phone books. It was kind of like this big pantry thing. And I pulled out, and I may have very well eaten the cookie. I mean, I have no recollection of that. I mean, I'm sure I did, probably. But I pulled out the phone book, and I went to O. And I saw Overeaters Anonymous. I cannot tell you why this happened. I mean, I truly cannot tell you why any of these things, these events happened. Why did I look at the phone book? Why did I open it up? But I did, because I'd heard these words. And I called the number. You know, I called the number, and, you know, thank God for the seventh tradition, because there was a machine on the other end that answered and said, you know, gave directions and a time to a meeting that night. I believe it was a Monday, not too far from where I was. And I went. I mean, I, like, wrote down the directions and put it away, and I went. And again, I don't know why I went. You know, I went alone, and I certainly didn't tell anyone because I had all this, you know, shame or pretense or whatever I had, you know. I mean, just probably, like, a lot of arrogance. And I drove there, you know, and I got there, and I little piece of shit car. Anyway, my little car, and I got there, and I walked in, and it was, I think, 7:30 to 9, you know, back in those 90-minute days, and this was in 93. I think it was like a September or August for some reason, because I think the semester had just began, but again, it could have been January for all I know. I really don't know. And I walked in the door, and it was a huge meeting. It was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 to 60 people, and it was theater seating, so there was like a big, you know, podium, and then a aisle, and then bunches of rows of seats on both sides. And I walked in, and they said, you know, is anyone here new? Well, you know, I sat in the back because, you know, that's what good newcomers do. So I sat in the back, and at some point in the meeting, they said, you know, is there anyone here for the first, second, or third time? And I raised my hand. Now, I just want to paint a picture for you. I'm driving this car that's barely running. I mean, I can't possibly take care of myself, so how could I take care of this car? I have on cutoff shorts that are very tight, jeans that are, you know, very tight. I have a blue shirt on that's, like, stained and all raggy. I have flaming red hair, okay, like fire engine red hair that's really, really short because I was just desperately trying to be counterculture. And I had these rag shoes on because these were the only shoes I wore. You know, these weren't the only shoes I had, but these kind of, like, raggy, sandal-y shoes things. So I'm sitting in the back, and I say, is there anyone new? And I raise my hand. So I walk up the aisle, and you know, everyone's clapping, you know, and I'm like, whoa, this is really bizarre. And this guy gives me a hug, and he gives me a chip. This is welcome, and it has a serenity prayer on the other side. So I went back, and I sat in the back, you know. Well, then, and I think I might have been the only one, or I don't know, maybe one of a few people that stood up that night. So then there was a break, you know, these coffee breaks that don't really exist anymore in OA meetings, but so these coffee breaks, and so at the coffee break, I was mobbed, you know, and I'm not joking when I say I was mobbed. It was like I was, you know, I don't know, Mick Jagger or Claudia Schiffer or something. I don't know. I mean, I was just mobbed. And I remember these two people in particular, this one woman who's kind of heavy set with dark hair, and this guy who was kind of older, white guy. And he said to me, it was just in the little, like, kitchen area, this kitchen sort of nook area. And he said to me, he looked at me, okay, he looked at me in the eye, which made me very uncomfortable because I really couldn't look at anyone in the eye. And he looked at me and he said, you do not have to live like you're living. And just like that, you do not have to live like you're living. You know, please join us, or why don't you join us, or something like that. And for like a split second, I felt like I was standing there with no clothes on. You know, like he had seen me in that minute, you know, in that moment. And just as quick as I had that feeling of, you know, being naked and whatever, in a snap, I was like, F you, you know, I was like, you don't know how I live. I mean, you know, I was like tough girl again, you know. But there was that little moment where I kind of like melted, or I kind of like was seen. And then instantly I, you know, was like arrogant and smug and self-righteous and dominating and all that stuff that they talk about. So that was sort of my first OA experience. And the woman was very nice. She had a bit of a lighter touch. And they gave me their numbers and their business cards and everything. And I really thought, well, I could maybe try this for, you know, let's see, 12 steps, maybe 12 days. You know, I was like, I had this whole plan, like how I was going to do it, you know. And I never left. So there you have it. So then what happened? So I didn't stop coming. That was in 1993, and I haven't stopped coming since. And that first meeting, I have to say, was pretty phenomenal. And I don't know if it's that I was ready and, you know, my higher power, like, led me there, or that it was, like, the people that were there. It doesn't really matter to me. It was the first place that I heard people say, the first time that I heard people talk about what they did with food, that I did with food. I mean, I am a, you know, frozen, burnt, stale gal. You know what I mean? I mean, it doesn't, you know, I would gnaw on frozen Weight Watcher brownies because, you know, 30 seconds in the microwave is 29 seconds too long. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't, I had to get it in me. You know what I mean? Or if it was too hot, oh well, you know, it doesn't matter. I worked in restaurants, and if it was on your plate and you didn't want it, looks good to me, you know? I mean, I had, and out of the garbage, you know, out of the garbage. And I would eat food out of the garbage. And that was not a financial necessity, you know, like I'd throw something away and then go back and get it. I had more people come up to me after meetings and say, oh, I've never done that, you know? And I feel like saying, yet, honey, you know? Like, and that's fine, you know, like, if I'm the sickest, then cool, you know, whatever, I'll take it. But that's just always funny to me. Oh, I've never done that. Oh, okay, great. You know, I mean, serious, people said that to me. I'm like, whatever. So, but yes, I did do that. So anyway, that meeting was the first place I heard people share about those kinds of things. And again, at the break, these people talked to me and they gave me a meeting list. I think they gave me a meeting list. I have no recollection, but I kept going back. And it was called the Oasis. It was like an Alano club for, like overeaters. And all they had were OA meetings there. And they had like a 7:30, a noon, and then a 7:30, or maybe even a 5. I mean, they had these constant OA meetings. And I just went. I just jumped in feet first. And, I mean, I think God knew that I needed to have zero life so I could be in like OA rehab. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't imagine coming into the rooms for me, like with kids or a partner or like a job or, you know, I mean, I was functioning just at the bottom, you know, and I'm glad because I was just immersed in OA and I didn't get abstinent. You know, I did not get abstinent. I mean, you can do the math. It was 93 and it was 95 when I got abstinent. So how did I get abstinent? I moved up to LA and I believe it was 94, yeah, that's when I moved here, and that freaks me out, it's been so long, and I kept going to meetings. I mean, I just kept going to OA meetings. I didn't know any different, and I wasn't abstaining. I was kind of standing a little bit and then binging and sort of starving a little bit and binging and, you know, kind of eating at crazy times, and you know, but I kept going to meetings, and if that's what you're doing, then, you know, welcome. And so I went to this Thursday night meeting. It still exists. It's in Santa Monica. And I'd go every Thursday. And every Thursday I'd see this woman, and she's very beautiful. She's blonde, slender, you know, not underweight, but slender, very beautiful, and just had that glow, you know, like that sober, abstinent glow. Turns out she was sober and abstinent, but in any event, I didn't know that. But, you know, just that glow. I knew she was abstinent. So, and I hated this woman, you know, I mean, how do you feel about those people? I hated them, you know, because they were like the happy people, you know, and, you know, I thought it was very sexy to be depressed and sad and dark and, you know, and whatever. But I was attracted to her, you know, and she would talk about abstaining, and she had humor, and she had levity, but she was committed to the program, you know, she wasn't frivolous, I mean, but she was just light, and I was anything but light, let me tell you. And so one day in February, I guess it was February, it must have been, I came up to her after the meeting, and I said, hi, maybe, probably not, I mean, I'm sure you wouldn't really want to, but could you sponsor me? And I said it like that, and she said, yeah, call me tonight. And I thought, well, don't you think that's a little soon to call you? You know, the meeting gets out at like 7:30, you know, I was like, what about Sunday, or I don't know, so I called her that night, and I'm like, hi, I'm Heidi, you know, whatever, and newcomer, you know, language or whatever, and she said, great, you know, and she just like, boom, she did not mess around, you know, it was like, AA, big book, AA, 12 and 12, you put down the fork, or you're going to die, you know, and I really needed that, it was kind of the slap, slap, you're not the center of the universe, you know, shut up, sit down, take the cotton out of your ears, put it in your mouth, and you'll get better. And again, after meetings, people always share this with me, like, oh, that's so mean, that's not loving, la, 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 fine, you know, whatever. For me, that's what I needed. That is what I needed, you know, and I don't need that today. I don't, but that is what I needed in the beginning, absolutely. And I'm grateful that I got someone from, like, major kind of PG-style recovery, you know, and that's what I needed. And she was loving. I mean, I don't want to paint a picture of this cruel woman. She wasn't. She was very loving. And
and I started abstaining. And I did not negotiate with this lady. I didn't negotiate at all. I mean, she wasn't ugly, but she was firm, you know. And if I'd call, and I was kind of like, you know, whine, she'd say, you know, I think you need to, you know, write, and then call me back. Or, you know, if I was, you know, doing the you or them thing, she'd say, okay, well, let's look at you. What's your part in this? You know, I mean, she really just kept steering me back to me and back to the program and to the steps and to the big book. And, you know, so then we got to step four and I did that, my first four step, which was so cute. It was so little, you know, I just didn't even know a thing, which is fine. And I met with her and it was lovely. I'll never forget this. I wore a dress. Because I wanted to like do my fifth step, because I wanted to like look pretty, you know, because I was becoming like a different person, you know what I mean? Like I was becoming a different person. So I wore a dress, and I'll never forget it had polka dots on it. And her grandmother lived in Beverly Hills in this very posh home, and she was living there temporarily because there's transition stuff. And I drove over and I went to her house and her grandma's house, and her grandmother was like this little lady. Oh, hi, honey, you know. And then she kind of disappeared. And this is such a sweet memory. I don't even know why I'm sharing it, but I am. So and then I remember we had Diet Coke with lemon, and we sat in the back, and it was very beautiful, you know, with this lawn that was like, you know, a golf course or whatever. And I did my fifth step with her, and she gave me a little present, a little like book or a little knick-knacky thing, which was so tender and it was so sweet. You know, it was just like I was just like a little, you know, duckling that just wanted to be around her and stuff. So which is great. It was wonderful, you know. So then she moved away. Which kind of rocked my world, but not really, because at this time I had some abstinence and I had some recovery and I was plugged in, you know what I mean? So it wasn't like, she wasn't like my program, you know, she was just part of my program. So she moved away and I got another sponsor, shortly thereafter. And I knew I needed to get another sponsor. Like, it wasn't like, oh, well, she's away, now I have no sponsor. I mean, I knew that I needed to get someone, so I asked someone else. And that woman has been my sponsor for, God, like 7 years. Many of you know her. She's a piece of work, but a gem, and just a blessing in my life. So, you know, I have a couple more minutes. So what it's like now is, you know, I'm abstinent imperfectly a day at a time. You know, and I really love OA. I really, really love OA. And I hope that I'm here for a really long time, a day at a time. And you know, I thought that if I could just, like, lose the weight and get this under control, you know, whatever the heck that means, then I could just, you know, see a goodbye. You know, I didn't intend to stay here as long as I've been here. And I didn't know that this would be a spiritual journey. I had no concept of that. And I'm glad I didn't. You know, because I don't know if I would have stayed. You know what I mean? Like, I'm glad that it was just real simple, black and white. Go to the meeting, get there on time, leave when it's over, talk to the newcomer. I mean, I needed, like, sort of strict, simple direction. That's really all I could handle. If someone tried to talk to me about the nuances of spirituality, I don't think I would have stayed. You know, I really needed really that basic program. And I feel like that's how I was, like, raised in this program, on those real basic principles, which for me just feels like a blessing. So, okay, what's it like now? I'm abstinent. I work with sponsees, which is probably one of the biggest joys of my life, if not the biggest joy of my life. They keep calling. Okay. some of them for years keep calling. I have a sponsor, as I said. My sponsor has a sponsor, and my sponsor's sponsor has a sponsor, and she has a sponsor. Okay? So this is a lineage. I am not, none of us are doing it alone, you know? I go to meetings. I have service commitments. You know, I don't know. That's just the deal. That's just what I do. It's not very sexy. It's not very elaborate. It's not a mystery. It's just as it's outlined, you know? And I'll just kind of close with, you know, it says in, I think it's the first line of the seventh chapter, that when all else fails, intensive work with other alcoholics, and in our case, compulsive overeaters, saves the day, you know. And I had the opportunity today to after a meeting that I have commitment at, to sit with a new sponsee, I mean, we're talking brand new, to the program and everything, and do step two, you know, and just sit there and do step two. And it was like, whoa, what a blessing, you know. And when I'm in service and when I'm in the program and when I'm really, you know, taking all that in, I can tell you that my food becomes irrelevant. I don't know how that works, Because my head says, go to work out, manage food, and life will be better, you know? And it's just the opposite. It's let go of that stuff, extend my hand to the newcomer, and my life gets better. And that's just my experience. And I hope that, you know, I've shared something tonight that you can, that helps you, or maybe it doesn't, I don't know. But, you know, my sponsor says sometimes, because, like, I've called her before and, you know, gone to meetings, I'm like, I carried the message, no one got it, you know? Like, how do I have the power to know that? But anyway, and no one got it. And you know what she says to me? She goes, did you carry it to you? You know, and I believe we get to carry the message to others, and we get to carry the message to ourselves. So, thanks.
You can take questions, and okay. Please repeat the questions to Mike so we can get it.
Questions from the group. Yes, hi.
How do you carry the message to someone who's not in the program but appears to maybe need the program?
Yeah, okay. The question is, how do I carry the message to someone who's not in the program but may appear to need the program? That's a sticky one. It's funny that you asked that, because I was just talking about that today with someone. I guess it's attraction rather than promotion, you know? I mean, I have a friend who is very heavy, maybe 300 to 400 pounds, and she has not asked me for help, you know? And she has not said that she has a problem with her food or with her body or her self-image. There's a line, I don't know where it is, it may be in some piece of literature. Oh, it's not this program. Oops, sorry. Anyway, it says something like, you know, when we give advice, we should pause and something like we should see if we've been asked, you know? And so I have to be really aware of, you know, am I giving unsolicited advice or guidance, which is crap. I mean, it's advice. Or am I just an example? And it's tough. It's so hard for me to see people suffer from all the diseases, so much so that I go to some other rooms to deal with that. So that's my experience with that. Yeah.
When you first started working with this doctor here in Los Angeles, was your abstinence strict, or do you recall it about abstinence?
Okay. Question is, what was my early abstinence like? It was not strict. I mean, it was essentially three, you know, buffets a day with nothing in between. I mean, I did not go, you know, I ate a lot. I didn't really restrict, as it were, anything, because I needed to, and this is just for me, everyone's different, but for me, I just needed to, like, stop eating and learn how to eat, like, breakfast food for breakfast, lunch food for lunch, and dinner food for dinner. And some of those meals in the early days, today would probably not be real comfortable meals, but in the beginning, it was the best I could do. The other thing was the sugar. No sugar. Because for me, it's like alcohol, like alcohol for the alcoholic. I can't stop. Like, my off switch is broken. And you want to know what's funny is, you know, talk about my arrogance, God, or self-centeredness. When she told me, look, I really don't care what you eat, you know, just three times a day with stopping with, you know, life in between. I thought, oh, this just cracks me up, but I'll just say it. I thought that she wanted me to be fat, like to make her look better. You know, like I thought, seriously, like I thought that she wasn't giving me the diet because she wanted me to stay heavier, to be heavier, you know. And what was hilarious about that, I mean, in retrospect, was that, I mean, I lost weight. You know, I think my body was like, oh, thank you, you know. I mean, I think it was like, okay, you know, because I would, like, starve all day, binge at night, eat all day, starve at night, exercise all morning, binge all day, exercise all... I mean, I would think nothing of being in a gym from 5 to 11, 6 to 11 in the evening. That seemed real normal to me, you know? So that's how it was in the beginning. Yeah?
I just had a question. I still seem to have put the food down. I'm still finding that I'm having emotional binges with, you know, people in my life, and especially authority. And I know I need to fight my lips, you know, or just shut up. But that's the whole emphasis to to shut up. It's just not that important to keep gaining the acceptance for and making, you know, my sobriety in relation to my my acceptance and all that. I guess my question is, you know, how did you get through, I mean, a period of that? I'm afraid that if I don't have some way to deal with people, then I'm going to get back in the food. You know, like, I always hear this stuff about, oh, shut up, shut down, totally. You have this event, you know, I feel like I'm a black and white addict, you know. It's like, I'll let someone totally railroad me, or I will stay until my tongue kills them, which is myself railroading these days, letting myself go over. So, just wondered what your experience is, or maybe was, I don't know if you can remember it early on, but, you know, how do you, you know, somehow can calm myself, telling myself to be quiet.
I'm going to repeat the question, and I probably will get it wrong, but the question is how to deal with people in early abstinence and how to maybe speak up for yourself when needed or not when needed. That kind of... I don't know. I guess it's just practice, you know? I mean, I don't really remember that those experiences... I mean, in early abstinence, I think it was just so precious and so unique to be abstinent or to have some sanity around food and body stuff that I don't even know that I paid attention to anything else really. But I know for now, I mean, with a God of my understanding in my life and with the steps and with my fellows that I run almost everything by my sponsor, almost everything. Difficult phone calls, difficult conversations, you know, the holidays are upon us, and let's see. My partner and I are not invited to spend the holidays with my family, and you know, whatever. But sometimes we are, and sometimes we're not. So it's a little confusing. So in any event, what I get to learn is when do I. You know, like I asked, you know, what's going on for the holidays, and I got a lot of vague answers, which means, you know, we're not invited, probably. And then, but then I had like a plan B, you know, or maybe that really was a plan B, and I had a plan A. But to really, and that's maybe that's not very relevant to your question, but is I run things by my sponsor, and I run things by my fellows, and my sponsor says if you get a good idea, and I've heard this from other people, so it's not just her. If you get a good idea from your higher power, make sure you check it out with an earthling, you know, and that really has helped me, you know, I mean, in the program, you know, and one who maybe knows you pretty well, because my sponsor knows my stuff, and there are other women in the rooms who know my stuff, so I'm not sure if that answers your question, but it's just practice, and it can be really sloppy, you know, I was given permission that, yeah, recovery can look really sloppy, and I mean that sort of figuratively, not literally, but yeah, we make mistakes and we do things. And I mean, just because I got abstinent, I didn't stop stealing, you know, and I didn't stop lying. And slowly over time I did, but you know, it wasn't like, oh, I was abstinent and suddenly I'm this, you know, like moral, centered, serene person. I mean, I was just a nut job. I mean, in some respects, being abstinent, you're kind of crazier than you are eating, because at least with the food, you can kind of squelch it and kind of keep it down, you know. So hope that answers your question. Is that it? No? Yeah.
About being permanently abstinent, mm-hmm. Have you established markers alerting when abstinence becomes a little too imperfect? How do you gauge imperfection?
The question is, what's my definition of gauging imperfection with respect to abstinence? And did you talk to my sponsor today? My chance? yeah, okay. You know, three meals a day with nothing in between, breakfast food for breakfast, lunch food for lunch, dinner food for dinner, something in between if there's going to be a long period of time between a meal, because I don't believe in, like, starving between meals for me. No binging. And no sugar. And I have been, God, I don't know, maybe 6 months, a year, I have been dancing, which is a maybe a, you know, polite way to put it, but with sugar. And try, you know, and kind of doing a little bit of kind of a little bit of this, kind of a little bit of that, and I really called into question my abstinence. You know, does that mean I'm still abstinent if I'm kind of doing a little bit here and there? And the direction I've been given, and this is so typical of my sponsor, is knock it off. You know, and she talks about, and I love this image, is a Russian as playing Russian roulette, that I may not. You know, I can eat something and wake up the next morning and be perfectly sane and happy and thin and, oh, great, you know. And maybe I have it again 2 days later. And then maybe 2 months later I have it again. And then maybe the fifth time I have it, 10 months later, I'm out. You know, it's like the loaded chamber. And she says to me, honey, I hope you don't hit a loaded chamber, you know. And maybe that's gruesome and maybe that's threatening and maybe that's punitive. I don't know. But it helps me. So pushing the envelope and dabbling in areas that are not real kosher for me means imperfect. But also imperfect means, you know, I don't eat like brown rice tofu and like, you know, broccoli. I mean, I would just die if that was what I had to eat every day. Now, I like those foods, but I also eat like burritos and pizza and hamburgers and, you know, steak and, you know, I eat really pretty much anything. Thank you, God. You know, thank you, God. I eat those things. So, I hope that answers your question. Okay, great. Thanks for letting me be a service. Thank you.